Welcome to the To Faithful Men podcast. This project started in 2006 to preserve old sermon and study tapes of Wiley Flanagan, Hassel Wallace, and Mike Strevel. 2 Timothy 2:2 says, "And the things that thou hast heard of me among many witnesses, the same commit thou to faithful men, who shall be able to teach others also."
2 Chronicles chapter 36. Verses 15 through 21 gives us a summary of the times of Judah, the last days, and also,
where are you at, man?
2 Chronicles, chapter 36, verse 15, it's the last chapter. "And the Lord God of their fathers sent to them by his messengers, rising up betimes and sending, because he had compassion on his people and on his dwelling place." Now this shows you the how God had cared for Judah and his compassion and his love for them, and especially his people and his dwelling place. But verse 16 gives you the reaction of the children of Judah. "But they mocked the messengers of God, despised his words, misused his prophets, until the wrath of the Lord arose against his people, till there was no remedy. Therefore, he brought upon them the king of the Chaldeans." Now, this is God's judgment, you see. Now, this is how the kingdom of Judah is judged. Because I want to emphasize the dominion of the world as it's given of God tonight as we study the second chapter. But now this shows you that it is how Israel's dominion, Israel's reign of having dominion over the earth, how it came to an end and why. "Therefore he brought upon them the king of the Chaldeans, who slew their young men with a sword in the house of their sanctuary, and had no compassion upon the young man, or maiden, old man, or him that stooped for age. He gave them all into his hand." You see how far-reaching Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar's power over Judah, over the young, over the aged. It was complete. "And all the vessels of the house of God, great and small, and the treasures of the house of the Lord, and the treasures of the king and of his princes, all these he brought to Babylon. And they burnt," this is Nebuchadnezzar, "they burnt the house of God, break down the wall of Jerusalem, and burnt all the palaces thereof with fire, and destroyed all the goodly vessels thereof. And them that had escaped from the sword carried he away to Babylon, where they were servants to him and his sons until the reign of the kingdom of Persia." Now you see, the Babylonian Empire only lasted 70 years, or say 73 years at the most. That was a length of the Babylonian Empire. Why? Because they had the children of Israel, children of Judah down there. They had the southern kingdom. And God was punished them. Now the next verse tells you why the 70 years. "To fulfill the word of the Lord by the mouth of Jeremiah, until the land had enjoyed her Sabbaths." 490 years previous to this, Israel had desecrated, failed to keep the Jubilee Sabbath, the seventh year Sabbath, for 490 years. So they're going to that land. God's going to see to it that his word was honored. He told them to let the land rest. They just taxed the land, kept working it, didn't obey God. Now then, they are to remain in Babylon for 70 years. For 7 into 490 is 70. 7 times 70 is 490 years. That makes for every year, for every Sabbath that they failed to keep, they stayed a year in Babylon. All right, and for as long as she lay desolate, see, she kept Sabbath to fulfill 70 years. Now that's the summary, the conclusion, as to why what God wanted Judah to know why they were going to Babylon. See, the last king, Zedekiah, when Nebuchadnezzar came up against him, Zedekiah and all of his trusted men, all of his generals, advisors, they slipped out of Jerusalem by a secret passage. And they were caught at Jericho. And then they were brought before Nebuchadnezzar, and they killed Zedekiah's boys right before him. And then they took a hot iron and punched and burnt, put out the eyes of Zedekiah, and then carried him on to Babylon. Now that was the last king, and that's how the kingdom of Judah fell. And from that day until this, the Jews, the children of Israel, who were chosen for a specific message, purpose, and mission, which was dominion, according to Deuteronomy 32, was to have dominion over the earth. That when God divided the nations, when he set the boundaries for the different nations of the world, he did so according to the 12 tribes of Israel. Everything, the whole world, this earth was laid out, its inhabitants, wherever people live. It was done so according to God's purpose, and the Jews were to be in the center of it, and they were to have the lead and dominion. That was the purpose of, in selecting Jews as a nation. We find out how the oracles of God, the law was given, you see, and how that the Redeemer was to come through them, see. But it was through Israel, but to bless the entire world, don't you see? That was the whole thing. Well, we'll mention that a little later. All right, now then, tonight we come to chapter 2, Daniel. Chapter 1 is simply an introduction to the entire book. There are 12 chapters in Daniel, and if you divide it in half, you'll have 6 historical chapters and 6 prophetical chapters. And yet, in the main, chapter 2 is certainly prophecy. It's a foundational prophecy of the Bible. From the times of the Jewish captivity, Daniel is the primer of prophecy. It's if you don't know Daniel, you'll never be able to understand Zechariah, Zephaniah, Ezekiel. See, Ezekiel was a prisoner, a captive in Babylon. He was a buddy of Daniel in Babylon, though Daniel was a man, was a statesman. He was a leader. He was a man in position of power all the time. Whereas Ezekiel was a priest among the Jews in Babylon. And, of course, that's when the synagogues came into being down in Babylon. They had no temple, and they couldn't worship, yet the religious Jews kept the ones that believed in God. They kept their meetings. They kept their study of the law and the Bible, what they had. Why, that's how the tradition and the custom in the New Testament times about the synagogue, why they had it and its importance. But now, chapter 1, verse 1 tells us that Jehoiakim was king of Judah. Tells us that Nebuchadnezzar was king of Babylon. It tells us that Nebuchadnezzar came against Jehoiakim, And verse 1 tells us that Jehoiakim had already reigned for 3 years when this took place. All right. Verse 2 says the Lord gave Jehoiakim into the hands of Nebuchadnezzar. That shows you how that God is in control of the affairs of this earth, the kingdoms of this world. God gave the rulership to Nebuchadnezzar. Well, then in the next verses 3 and 4, the children of Daniel and his three buddies, that describes their countenance, their character, their conversation, and their capabilities, all given in the next few verses. Then you have, then comes the request, the conversation between Daniel and the eunuch who was in charge of the wise men. See, Daniel and these three boys gave, they were already knowledgeable about science. And they already showed evidence, gave evidence of their wisdom, being wise. So they must have been somewhere between 18, 20 years of age at least, see, when they were brought to Babylon. So if they stayed there, and they did, you see, 70 years, 70 plus, say, 20, that'd be 90. So Daniel, when we get to the end of Daniel here, Daniel would be 90 years old. When Daniel was put in the fiery furnace, he was an old man. He wasn't a boy. We'll see, we'll notice that as we go along. But then you see Daniel's purpose, his portion, his proof, his purity, and the prince, the man that he had to deal with. Then in verse 17 is one of the most important verses in the book of Daniel. Chapter 1, 17. These four children, God gave them knowledge. He gave them skill. He gave them understanding. And to Daniel, he gave a double portion of understanding dreams and visions. Then, verse 18 through 21, tells us the after these boys had finished their seminary course, they had a 3-year course in studying Chaldean in the language. They had a 3-year preparation to be servants in the government in the Babylonian government. Nebuchadnezzar wanted them as to rule over the Jewish element to keep peace among the captives, you see. So Nebuchadnezzar came and he looked at him. And then he saw that Daniel was, stood out head and shoulders above the other three even. And he gave him a place of power. Alright. So now, chapter 2. Now in the meantime, while all of this was, making history, Nebuchadnezzar went up to Carchemish, and defeated the Egyptians. And that was in the 4th year of Jehoiakim's reign. See, he went against the first part of chapter 1 took place in the 3rd year of Jehoiakim's reign. So after he got back, why then here, this Pharaoh Necho, he went on up, he was headed for Carchemish, see. So Nebuchadnezzar goes after him. He defeats the Egyptians. And from that day till this, Egypt has been a second-rate, fourth-rate power, as far as that's concerned. And God said there'd never be a world power anymore. Now, chapter 2 begins with Nebuchadnezzar returning from that battle. It says, "And in the second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadnezzar dreamed dreams." See, this is his second year. Now notice, it says the second year of Nebuchadnezzar, yet he's been, he was king chapter 1:1 says that he was king when he went up to Jerusalem. But he was only acting as king. He was only doing the service of a king. In other words, his father had appointed him. His father was old, and in fact died while Nebuchadnezzar had gone up to Judea, according to profane history. And then he returns home, brings these captives back, and then was made king, and then went to Carchemish, see? And now he returns, and that's his second year, see, of Nebuchadnezzar. So that's how the term, the time element evolved. All right, now notice, Nebuchadnezzar, when he tried to sleep, and he couldn't go to sleep. Well, he went to sleep, but while he was going to, before he went to sleep, Nebuchadnezzar got to thinking about this king. Now, look, I've just finished off the Egyptians. Now, who might finish me off? How is my kingdom going to come out? How long will I rule? Who is my next enemy? Oh, he could strut now, see. He had defeated the Assyrians and the Egyptians. Nobody was giving him any trouble. There wasn't anybody anywhere that could cause him any trouble. But he got to thinking, well, there might be, you know. I'll show you that he was thinking about this as when we get through. The Bible doesn't say anything about that right here now. But now you'll have an allusion to it. And an inference, a reference to it, a little later. And his spirit was troubled, and his sleep broke from him. He just couldn't sleep. You know, there was a few years after this, you'll find where God controlled the man's sleep again, you know. You remember about with Esther? You know, the king? Why, he couldn't sleep, you know, and old Haman, you see, was trying to do away with all the Jews. Yeah, see, Mordecai was the Jew, but now old Haman was Mordecai's deadly enemy, see, but the king, Ahasuerus, King Ahasuerus, which was Xerxes, he was friendly to the Jews. See, Esther was his favorite woman. And Haman had got that tricked the king, you see, and had given him permission to put to death all of the Jews throughout the land. But then, for some reason, you see, he couldn't sleep. The Lord was working on him, and he got made him get up and read in the law, and he read in the book, you know, where that Mordecai had befriended him, saved his life, you see. And as a result of that dream, why, that saved the physical lives of the Jews, the natural Jew, for that period. Now then, this dream, Nebuchadnezzar couldn't sleep, and then the king commanded to call the magicians and the astrologers and the sorcerers and the Chaldeans for to show the king his dream. So they came and stood before the king. Now, boy, that was an honor to be called by the king. And these old boys, you know good and well, they was ready for him to give them a raise, you know, to set them, give them power, put them in the kingdom. Because now he's gonna tell us a dream. We'll tell him something anyway. We'll fool him. He don't know nothing about dreams. We're the only ones who knows anything about dreams. Well, they get before him, and boy, they stand in his presence, and they say, the king said unto them, I have dreamed a dream, and my spirit was troubled to know the dream. Then spake the Chaldeans to the king in Syria. Now here's where the book of Daniel begins being written in Aramaic. From verse 4 through the 7th chapter is written in Aramaic originally. Chapter 1, chapter 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12 was written in Hebrew. Why? Because he's fixing to speak now to the Chaldeans. Their native, this is what pertains to the Chaldeans. This is their language. They weren't Jews. They're not familiar with the Jewish language. here's a conversation now that was carried on between Nebuchadnezzar and the wise men, the astrologers, the soothsayers, the Chaldeans, and that is a term at this point to show wise men, men who were familiar with dreams and interpreting and setting the horoscopes and the future and everything. All right? So he said in Aramaic, or Syriac, see, Assyrian language, the word Aram, Aramaic, comes from a descendant of Shem, whose name was Aram. See, Aramaic, it's spelled, all it is, all you do is add the ending to it, you see. And this is the language that he spoke, that dates back to his family lineage. But now he says, the king answered, and said unto the Chaldeans, the thing is gone from me. See? They ask in verse 4, tell thy servants the dream, and we will show the interpretation. Oh, they were just eager for it, see. Tell us the dream, we'll show you the interpretation. Boy, they could make an interpretation. You tell me, that's just like any fortune teller. You go in art, you've got to, they've got to have some information from you first, see. They're handicapped till you tell them something, till you give them the leads, and then they'll start reading your mind, you see, or doctoring you up, and they'll watch your expression. If it don't go right, well, then they'll get on another track, see. Oh, they that's the reason why they're called wise men, see. Now, in verse, so the king says to the Chaldean, the thing is gone from me. If ye will not make known unto me the dream, with the interpretation thereof, ye shall be cut in pieces, and your houses shall be made a dunghill. Now, boy, Nebuchadnezzar wasn't going to mess with him, was he? He ain't fool nobody. He said, now listen, I called you in here because I have forgotten the dream. You tell me the dream. Now, God had just as much to do with Nebuchadnezzar forgetting this dream is he did give it to him in the first place. So you can put that down in the beginning of this thing. Because the book of Daniel, the whole purpose is to show you that the God of heaven is sovereign over the events of this world, the affairs, the government of this world. And that's what this book is about. It's about the governments that's going to be up on this earth. Why are they? Who's in charge? What's the future governments? That's what Daniel was saying. That's what Nebuchadnezzar was wondering when he went to sleep, and that's what he dreamed about. But now it'll unfold as we read along. He says, "But if you show the dream," now Nebuchadnezzar was he was willing to dig deep in his pocketbook. See, he was willing to give them a raise. Anything they wanted. He says, but if you show the dream and the interpretation thereof, ye shall receive of me gifts and rewards and great honor. Gifts, rewards, and honor. Isn't that what the politician's looking for? That's what the average man is successful if he's got wealth and if he's got honor. See? And rewards recognized by the king. Alright? Therefore, show me the dream and the interpretation thereof. Now, he didn't say, now, if you will, show me. That's a command. And that comes from the king who had more authority, more power than any other king ever lived on this earth. As far as a human government. Look at the Medes and the Persians who followed Nebuchadnezzar. Why, they lost their authority. Well, they could, if they signed something, if they gave their word about something, that word was law. The king was subject to his own law. Nebuchadnezzar wasn't subject to no law. He didn't answer to any man. See? Not to any set of men or to any set of writings. He himself was law. And what he did, he tells us a little later, and he shows us that old boy that Jesus talked to, he didn't know anything about telling a servant to go and command it to come here, and one comes and go, and he goeth. See? Nebuchadnezzar says, "Now show me the interpretation." Verse 8, "The king answered and said, I know of certainty that you would gain the time, because you see the thing is gone from me." You know, Ephesians 5:16 says something about redeeming the time, don't it? For the days are evil and so forth. All right, now here's the same expression. Nebuchadnezzar looked at these astrologers, these wise men, these soothsayers, and he says, "You're stalling." See? He says, "You're wanting to buy up the time for your own end." See? He's using it for themselves. And what they wanted, what they were doing, they were using their wisdom, and they knew that, well, now, if we can postpone this thing. See, it's kind of like a lawyer when they got a case and it's too hot to handle right then. They want it postponed. They want the atmosphere to change. They want maybe his disposition will change. Maybe he'll relent and not be so fierce. Because he done told us up here. He said, "Now, if we don't make known that, he gonna cut us to pieces." They weren't ready to be made in hamburgers, see? Not any of McDonald's worm mixture there. Boy, that would have been a mixture, wouldn't it? See? All right? Nebuchadnezzar saw that they were stalling. And he says, "But if you will not make known unto me the dream, there is but one decree for you, for ye have prepared lying and corrupt words to speak before me, till the time be changed." See? Till you think I'll change. Till you think you'll get off, you know. "Therefore, tell me the dream, and I shall know that ye can show me the interpretation thereof." Evidently, Nebuchadnezzar felt that if they could tell the dream, he'd remember it, couldn't he? See? Either that or he's feigning. I believe he actually forgot the dream. Because if he hadn't forgotten the dream, Daniel never could have been brought before it, see? So Daniel don't know anything about it, what's going on now. See, this is this Chaldean, this is a soothsayer. Verse 10, "The Chaldeans answered before the king and said, there is not a man upon the earth that can show the king's mind." Now they told the truth. There's not a man upon the earth that can give you that. "Therefore, there is no king, lord, nor ruler that asks such things as any magician or astrologer or Chaldean." You see, there's a mild rebuke by these wise men to the king. He said, since it's impossible that no man, there's not a person on earth that can tell you what you forgot. See, you had a dream, and tell that. And so they said, "Why, no wise man, no ruler, no king ever made such a demand upon anyone. And it is a rare thing that the king requires, and there is none other that can show it before the king, except..." Now notice what these heathen soothsayers. They might not have been such heathens after all. "Except the gods whose dwelling is not with flesh." Now he says there's somebody, but they're not on the earth. And they're not dwelling in the flesh. But you know, John 1:14 says that this God that wasn't in the flesh then became flesh and dwelt among us. See? And the Samaritan woman said, when he comes, he'll show us all things. He'll tell us all things. See? Now that Samaritan woman knew that. These astrologers knew that there was a God that didn't dwell in the flesh. And this Samaritan woman says, well, he'll tell us all things.
Thank you for listening. Don't forget to subscribe and share with a friend. Be steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord. For as much as ye know that your labor is not in vain in the Lord.